Wanda McKinley, the
founder of Love Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining our show this evening. My name is Wanda McKinley, the founder of We Are Survivors, which is a nonprofit organization. Our purpose is to provide a stable environment for abuse and that of women and children by providing temporary shelter, counseling, and employment training. We want to help women transition from abusive situations to being self-sufficient women in society. We Are Survivors' vision is to empower women and to show them that they can and will survive and thrive in society on their own, and to uplift them and provide them a new life with a new perspective of a normal life by enhancing and elevating themselves. I, myself, am a survivor of domestic violence. I was raped from the age of 7 to 18 by my biological father as well as my stepfather. My ex-husband was also abusive. He was sexually, financially, verbally, emotionally, and physically abusive, and I was with him for 12 years. God has called me to be transparent so that I may help other women and children who have and may still be walking in my shoes. Once again, thank you for joining us. Today, we'll be talking to Angela Thompson, who is the author of Hands of Abuse, The Unforeseen Truth, How Domestic Violence Changed My Life. Hello, Angela. Are you with us today? Okay, she hasn't gone on yet. Okay. Well, as we wait for her to join us, I want to go over some things. How can I know if I was a victim of sexual child abuse? And some of the things that you can ask yourself was, when you were a young child or teenager, were you fondled or kissed or held by an adult and for a sexual gratification? Were you forced to perform oral sex on an adult or sibling? Were you raped or otherwise penetrated, made to watch sexual acts, forced to listen to excessive talk about sex? Were you shown sexual movies? Were you made to pose for seductive or sexual photographs? Were you involved in child prostitution or pornography? Were you forced to partake in any physical, psychological, or sexual torture? These are questions that you can ask yourself. Some people are unable to remember any specific instances like the ones mentioned above. You may have a strong feeling of something and don't really know why or how, but you just feel something is just not right. The fact that someone else has suffered from abuse, you may talk to them and they may reach out to you, and because they feel like something is just not right. A lot of times when we feel something or if we suspect something, then it's a possibility it is true. I want to go a little bit further into understanding your emotions and your feelings. A lot of times we don't remember. It's like, but I feel something is not right. I feel something different, but I just can't remember. Children often cope with abuse by forgetting it ever happened. As a result of that, you may have no conscious memory of being abused. You may have forgotten large chunks of your childhood. This can cause you to be frustrated because you can't quite understand why are you having these emotions. When you are touched in a certain way, you may feel nauseated. Certain words or facial expressions may scare you. Little things like that may trigger something. You know, there's a reason why somehow you just feel like you and your mother didn't connect. Sometimes you may sleep with your clothes on, even up until junior high school. Some children even experience high school. You just feel as if you're alone, like you have no support. The one important thing about coping with sexual abuse is getting some type of support. Actually, talking to someone, reaching out, no matter how you may feel, is very important to be in some type of process for healing. Much of the damage that we experience is the result of keeping it secret. It's the result of burying it. It's the result of not expressing how you feel. It's very important to be able to talk about what you feel. It's very important to be able to express what's going on. Where are you mentally and emotionally and processing? A lot of times you have to jot down a memory, something that might jog your memory, something that may occur, something that may happen, and you don't know why you're remembering this, or you don't quite understand why you're feeling a certain way. But what happens is when these things happen and these things occur, and your memory, something from your memory is brought back, then a journal. Journals are a very good thing to have, because then you can write down your thoughts. You can write down your feelings. You can write down your emotions. And by doing this, you can go back to reflect on what you're feeling. You can go back to reflect to someone when you're going to a counselor. Many people say, well, why write? One handy thing about writing is that it's almost always available. If something occurs to you at 3 in the morning when you're alone and you don't want to wake up your partner, when your friends are out of town, when your counselor's answer machine or voicemail picks up, there's always your journal. It's quiet. You can take it wherever you want. You can keep it with you. A journal can help you figure out how you feel, what you think, what you need, what you want to say, how you want to handle a situation. You can actually deal with that all by just writing it down. Choose a time and a place where you won't be interrupted. Have a peace. A lot of times when things occur for me, I feel that if I just go to a special place where it's just me by myself, and the anger that I may feel, the confusion that I may feel, if I just write down, because I may not have the answer to why am I feeling this way? Why do I have this anger? But if I write it down, and when I go back to reflect on it, when I'm in a different space, sometimes it makes more sense.
Hello?
Hi, is this Ms. Thompson?
No.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Just it dialed
you. Okay, no problem.
So being heard, writing itself is very helpful, but sharing is even better. Because when you share your emotions, you're allowing yourself to be expressive. You're allowing a healing process. A lot of survivors, we begin healing by talking about it. It was like it was a release of tension. It was saying that, okay, I don't have to be quiet. I don't have to be shamefaced in. I have found in this journey of mine that I'm not alone. And it amazes me how many of us are out there and how many of us need each other. It's amazing to me that I have found sisters. I have met some beautiful women, and with these women, I have bonded. It has shown me that I can be me, and I can actually acknowledge why I am the person that I am today. Why do I say the things that I say? Why do I act the way I act? Now, by me sharing and being heard, I feel better. And because of me acknowledging the way I am, when something happens, now I can say, wait a minute, that's why I did that. We are in that abusive situation. The abuser has this power over us. The abuser makes us feel as if we're nothing, makes us feel like we don't even belong being on this earth. But now I feel like I'm empowered. Like my voice matters. My being here matters. When you are a victim, you feel powerless. Being a survivor, you are the power. And you have this inner peace that you're working towards building, because just getting a feel of being okay is going to drive you to want that inner peace to even grow. Do you feel different from other people? The question you ask yourself. Now, when the abuse was going, when you're going through the abuse, we felt very different. We felt alienated. As a survivor, you should feel also different because you've overcome. You have a testimony. You have a story to tell. You have this experience that God brought you through, and he brought you through it so that you can share what you've experienced and to acknowledge that you are different. But now you're different in a better way. You're different in a way that God has used you to be able to show his work. Do you feel something's wrong with you deep down inside? The abuser makes us feel as if it's our fault. They make us feel as if you didn't do that, or if you didn't say this, or you didn't look a certain way, then these things wouldn't happen to you. Those things that the abuser tried to make it about you were about them. Did you ever feel self-destructive or suicidal, or that you simply wanted to die? The abuser strips all of your dignity away. The abuser makes you feel as if you don't deserve to be here, that no one loves you, but we all know God does. But the abuser, whole point, whole objective is to bring you down to there is nothing left, to bring you down to where they have all of the control. Did you hate yourself? Do you hate yourself? There comes a point in time when that abuser will make you even turn on your own, on yourself, and make you believe that you deserve it. Makes you believe that, well, if I would have done this way, or if I would have done that way, that no, he won't hit me, or no, he won't kick me. So then the abuser makes you start questioning yourself and makes you start literally, emotionally, psychologically abusing yourself, because then you begin to beat yourself up. you begin to think that, okay, I did this. And that's something that we do to ourselves, not intentionally, but because it's been something that is being to us, something is being said over and over and over. Do you have a hard time nurturing yourself, taking care of yourself? Are you even able to enjoy feeling good? Some victims don't even know how to smile. I talked to a survivor about a month or so ago, and her husband at the time had her so low that she walked with her head down. She didn't even know how to feel good, not only about herself, but about the sun shining, about the grass being green. She didn't know how to feel good about anything, because when she did lift her head, he hit her so hard it knocked it back down. So in her mind, she felt that was the safest place for her to be when she walked or when she was out and about and around him, was to look down, was to feel sad. So she never even knew how to feel good about herself. And because she didn't know how to feel good about anything, she didn't take the time out to nurture her, care of herself. She didn't take the time out to look in the mirror and see the beautiful person that she is, because he had stripped her from that. And he made sure that every opportunity that he received, he reminded her that she, in his world, meant nothing and didn't even deserve to be there. Then we go through this question, do you find it hard to trust your intuition? Women, we all laugh and we say, oh, a woman's intuition is something else. It's that gut feeling that we get as women that tell us, oh, wait, stop, reevaluate that. That second voice is also effective, because you find yourself fighting with what you know is right, what you feel is right, but you have him saying, no, I'm in control. You do as I say. Then you feel like sometimes you're unable to protect yourself in dangerous situations. Like, if you've ever experienced repeated rape or a repeated assault, instead of fighting back, for me, what I did was, okay, this is only going to last a few minutes. This is only going to last 5, 10, 2, 3, however long. So I'll just take it, whether it's a beating, whether it's words, whether it's rape. In our heads, we program ourselves to remove ourselves from the situation, accept what is happening to us, because we have come to grips that we will be okay as soon as the attack is over. So because of that, when we get into dangerous situations, we do not normally react to the fighting back. We allow certain situations to occur because of the way we've trained ourselves and the way we are, and we just say, okay, it'll be over in a minute. Do we have a sense of our own interests, our own talents, our own goals? No. All of those are stripped. We have no identity. All we have is a name. And that name is so that he can give you a call so that you'll know he's talking to you if he chooses to use your name. He may have another name for you. But we lose ourselves in the abuser. We begin to identify with the abuser. We don't even know what it is that we want. Because we're so consumed with surviving. We're so consumed with making the abuser happy. We're so consumed with, I just want to get through today. Lord God, you woke me up this morning. I pray that my day is smooth. I pray that there's no anger, there's no physical contact, that everybody's happy, and I can lay my head down, say my prayers, and I've made it through my day. We don't stop to think about what we want. Oh, I need to get my hair done. My nails, you know, just little things that other women take for granted. For me to be able to go by, and now I'm known for my shoes. But there was a point in time when I had to call my husband and ask my husband if I can buy me a pair of shoes. So now, I have just gone shoe crazy. But I don't have to have permission anymore. I can spend my money on things that I want that makes me feel better. And see, a lot of women don't understand or don't even realize that you can be financially abused. You go to work, yet and still, you have no control over your money. And everything that you do spend, you have to justify it or get permission. So now, shoes, here I come. Do you have a problem with feeling motivated? As a victim, that's getting up out of the bed. That's the getting up, getting dressed. That's the getting to do everyday living. You lose the sense of wanting to get up. Oh, God, is today going to be like yesterday? Jesus, please. Can I just have one good day? Can he just be happy? Can he not come home wanting to argue? Can he not come home wanting to fight? Can he not stop by the bar or the liquor store? Can I just be, clothes are washed, everything is hung up, house is clean, favorite TV show is on. When he gets in, I'll have the plate fixed, ready for him to eat. Lord, just please. I want to be motivated to do more than just get up and serve him. Are we afraid to succeed as victims? For me, I wasn't afraid to succeed, but I didn't strive to succeed. I felt like my husband's thumb was on top of my head. So every little thing that I tried to do or experience or, okay, I want to venture out and do this. It's like he had his thumb pushing me down. It was as if I couldn't maneuver. And whatever I thought was going to be successful, he tried a way to sabotage it. Do we accomplish what we set out to do? I didn't. But it didn't stop me from trying. When I started to grow stronger and, okay, I need to free myself from this situation. I need to be that individual where I want me back. So I start setting goals. And it would give me something to look forward to, no matter how far that goal was. I still had it. I was still reaching for it, and I still wanted it. And that gave me something to strive for. Being a survivor, I know that I had, and I still do, because I'm still healing, I'm still going through my process. I have troubles expressing my feelings. And I can get angry very quick. And I get angry before I know it. Get very defensive. So even to this day, if someone was to ask me about my personal money, it would send me into a frenzy. And I just last weekend, to be honest, I've always been told that. It's like, why do you always get defensive? And why do you always start explaining yourself? And this conversation came up this past weekend. And I was getting out going to the store. And I got into the store. I was in Kroger's and I just bawled. I probably thought I was crazy. But it's after all these years, it finally dawned on me why I do that. And that is simply because of the financial abuse that I went through. And we're talking about years ago. But it took all of this time for me to actually realize that that's why I get very defensive and I find myself explaining when and where and how and why I spent my money. But that puts me to the victim, but I'm a survivor. And part of being a survivor is acknowledging, okay, that's why I do that. Oh, now that I know, I can work on it. And that goes back to earlier when I said writing things down. So now I jot that down. I thought, okay, this is why I do that. And as I figured it out, I got calm. And then I could go back to apologize to the person I snapped on, blame to them. And that's part of the healing process. Acknowledging why we do what we do. Then when you acknowledge it, if your actions affected someone in a negative way, we've been there. And we know how it feels to be affected in a negative way. So we definitely don't want to do that to someone else. So once we realize what we've done, then we go back, and I did, went back and explained after all this time, I can now explain to you and myself why I did what I did. Now I can truly apologize and sincerely mean it because now I understand, Wanda. I understand why Wanda reacted the way Wanda reacted. It was like being in a dark room and the heavy curtains were opened and the sun shined in. It was beautiful. It was such a release to finally, because I never could answer that question, well, why are you getting so defensive? But you don't have to explain all that, and I felt I had to. Because in my past, I did. And it's amazing when you begin to open yourselves up to want to be healed, to want to understand what happened to you, to want to understand why you act the way you act. When it does occur, it's like a wow. Oh, God, that makes so much sense. It's like a praise moment. It's praise break. Because now I figured out something. Okay, I got that part. God, what's next? So then you ask yourself, too, why do I feel a wide range of emotions? Prime example, never understood why. I could be watching a commercial, and I'm too young to be going through menopause, so I could be watching TV, and just out of the blue, I could just be crying. I never understood why. I was like, okay, I know I'm not having a mental breakdown, but why I watch something and just start crying? I never really liked watching love movies. It was something about love. I just the happiness. Is that really for real? Can people really live happily ever after? Is that for real? So it took me some time to analyze that. And I had to realize that I had to acknowledge the fact that I questioned true love. In my mind, what happened for me, and I live by this, you can't tell someone that you love them. You can't love them and mean it and tear them down physically, emotionally, verbally, mentally. You cannot say that. You love someone, but then you tear them down. And for me, I had to understand that the people that were saying, I love you, they really didn't love me. You couldn't have. Because if you loved me, why are you raping me? If you love me, why did you bust my eardrum? If you love me, why are you trying to set my clothes on fire? That's not love. So for me, I had to stop and evaluate what I'm feeling. And now I know that I wasn't crazy about love romantic movies because I didn't really believe in true love. Because I had to go through my healing, my understanding, because these people that hurt me were the ones that were saying, I love you. The people that were making me feel as if I was worth nothing were the ones that were saying, I love you. So for me, I didn't quite understand the movie, the romantic movies. Have you ever been violent or just angry for no reason? I know as a survivor, we can have a moment when we just are mad. We can't even explain why all of a sudden we have this anger and don't want to be around nobody. You don't want to be in the presence. You don't want to talk. You just want to be left alone, and you can't explain why you're mad. I have had mad episodes where I'm so mad, I'm screaming and I'm crying. But I've learned my anger comes from hurt, comes from pain. It comes from unanswered questions. It comes from not understanding, God, why? Did all those things happen to me? God, why did my father decide he wanted to sleep with his own daughter? Not once or twice. God, and then again, my stepfather? See, that's when, as a victim, we begin to think that we deserve what we're getting. Because it's repetitious. Or this is all our lives are going to be about. And that's not so. Our bodies, you know, for myself, because my molestation began at a very early age, children, we learn about our bodies. And when we or growing up, you learn that the girl and the boy is different. You learn that you are an adult and a child. But because a child looks up to an adult, the lines are blurred. So then you ask questions like, okay, see, what does the abuser look like? I've gotten questions like that because sometimes we feel as if it's the person that's on the corner, someone that we don't even know. When in reality, most of the time it's the person right there under the same roof. And it sends mixed emotions because as a child, you trust that person. So adults begin to come up with ways to seduce that child. I can remember as far back, and there are actually pictures of me, 3 and 4 years old. And at the time, it was Boone's Farm. And that's what I was given to drink. And of course, as an adult, you know, if you drink enough of that, the effect it will have. Well, as a young child, the effect, I just remember always just feeling happy. Just always feeling pretty much light on my feet. And unfortunately, my father introduced alcohol to me at a very early age. And I remember my mom making a comment that when my sister, who's 2 years behind me, they gave her some. And my sister acted really crazy. And it scared them so that they didn't give her any more. And I wonder if that saved her. It's always been a question of mine. Did it save her? Intimacy. For some of us that have gone through sexual abuse, intimacy is a very touchy subject because we ask ourselves, do you find it difficult to trust anyone? Do you have any close friends? These are questions that are asked. And for me, I know the definition of a friend. Have I ever had one? In my mind, no. Now, in that other person's mind, they may have thought they were my friend. But I don't trust. How can I trust you? I don't know you. My mother and father, two people, they got gave to us to protect us, to nurture us, to teach us, to guide us, to be an example for us, are the two people that hurt me the most. So if I can't trust my parents, how can I trust a stranger? A healthy relationship. Survivors, yes, we can have healthy relationships. You'd be happy. Actually can love and live happily ever after. But as a victim, we don't, the relationship that we're in, to us, that's a healthy relationship. And unfortunately, the pattern is repeated. If that person is not helped, if that person is not reached out to say, hey, this is not normal. This is not the way to live. Let me help you. Let me guide you. Let me pray with you. Let me help you. They're not reached out too. And I know a lot of times when we're in it, we don't see it. We get defensive. Who are you to say I need help? But all we can do as survivors is just be there. So when they do realize they need your help, we're there. Have there been times when you felt it difficult to be nurturing and affectionate? I have a 22-year-old daughter. She's the love of my life. And I thought I was doing everything that I was supposed to. You know, she was in cheerleading, Girl Scouts.
straight A student, honor roll, perfect attendance. I was just like a sergeant, drill sergeant. Protected her. You can't go outside. You can't do this. You can't do that. Because I was in that protective mode. My child is not going to experience what I experienced. So I thought I was doing all the right things. But because I was not close to my mother, I didn't trust my mother, I didn't pick up the nurturing part. I'm good at it now, though. Very good at it. But for her growing up and listening to her, I'm like, wow. But I thought I was doing what I was supposed to do. I thought as a mother, I got this. I'm just going to do everything opposite of what my mother did. Not so. But now I let my child know that I love her. I wait when she wakes up in the morning or even when she's still asleep. I kiss her every morning before I leave to let her know, hey, mom is growing. Mom has grown. And just because I put a roof over your head and I feed you and I clothe you and I make sure you get to school, that's not all it takes to being a mother. Emotionally, yes, I love my child. And yes, she's always been the best thing. But did I always say that? Did I always show her that emotionally? Unfortunately, I didn't know how. I learned that in my healing process. Now that I know, okay, I've got to, because when my mother told me 6 years ago for the first time she loved me, I didn't even know how to receive it. I didn't know if I should get mad or angry, confused. I didn't know. You what? What does that mean, Mom, exactly? And this is a mother, we've had fist fights. Mom, explain to me, what does that mean? 6 years ago. I'll be 43 this year. It was a long time for her to say, I love you. I don't let a day go by without letting my child know that I love her. Me and my mother now don't let a week, 2 or 3 days, week is the longest because of the weekend, go by without talking to when before, I was going to say growth and God and the things that can happen through prayer. Now, that woman, honey, if I don't call her or she don't call me, we're like, where have you been? When before, we had no relationship. Speaking of relationships, commitment. Wow, that's a big word. As a survivor, I have no issues with commitment as a survivor because I know I can be committed to someone and that one person. As a victim, my mindset was just simply surviving. So if being with this person is going to satisfy my abuser, then that's what you do. You can't, in an abusive situation, you're committed to someone else's needs. You're not committed to yourself. By me being committed to myself, I'm able to make me happy. Making me happy is being in a healthy relationship because I'm committed to making Wanda happy. And I know that I can be and I deserve a healthy relationship. I also have been asked a couple of times about being afraid. We can get in a relationship and we're afraid of it being normal. because we're so used to chaos. So if it's not chaotic, if it's not fighting, if it's not arguing, if it's not screaming, then we find ourselves coming up with something. We find ourselves wanting to argue. We find ourselves doing things that's going to provoke that other person. Because we don't know what it feels like to be normal. We cheat ourselves out of a peace of mind. We cheat ourselves out of that inner peace because we are afraid. We are afraid of it. And we've got to learn how to embrace us, embrace who we are as individuals, embrace who we were put on this earth to do, our purpose. God didn't put us here to be beat down, to be talked about, to be raped. That's not why we're here. And I know as a victim, the word no. For me growing up, no one said no to me. No one said no to Wanda. Whatever Wanda wanted, Wanda got it, even as an adult. That's not always a good thing, because when you do hear the word no, you don't know how to process it. My friends laugh at me. I'm like, did you just say no? But they don't know what that stems from. They just laugh, but I'm serious. Some of us, don't understand that we can say no. Because a lot of times as a victim, no can be manipulated in so many different ways. No, you can't have that. Or never hearing the word no. For me, I could always anticipate getting what I wanted because my abuser thought that if they kept me happy, then they could have me. I wish I would have learned the word no as a young child. When we're in abusive relationships with our significant others, we can't tell them no. We are afraid of saying no. Because if we say no, then what's going to be the repercussions? Some married women think that they cannot be raped by their husbands. The fact is, if you say no, no means no. And if he still proceeds to have sex with you against your will, that's rape. As victims, we are afraid to say no because we are afraid of what's going to happen. For me, when I was able to tell someone no and didn't get slapped or didn't get yelled at, it actually builded up my confidence little by little. It's the little things that we go through that people take for granted because they'd be like, well, how is by saying no to someone major? I say no all the time. Well, have you ever said no and then got up off the floor? Have you ever said no and when you came to, you had to go clean your face? So to be able to say no and still be standing, it's an awesome feeling. Because many victims say no and regret it. As a survivor, we can say no and feel empowered because we're still standing. When we go through sexual abuse, many times we find ourselves avoiding sex or total opposite, and begin to have sex with random people. When, for me, being sexually abused at a very young age and for a very long period of time, I found myself acknowledging the fact that my body is going to get me what I want. All I have to do is swap out, give some sex, get what I want. That's how I was brought up. Wow. It worked. So at the time, I didn't see anything wrong with it. And my father, you know, when you're growing up, your parents say these little sayings that you carry with you all your life, and you just remember, oh, my mom said this. And you're like, oh, and it's something to motivate you, something that you think about when you're feeling down or sad or just not, just that you just think of something that they used to tell you. Well, the one saying that my father said to me that I remember was that a woman should never be broke because she has something between her legs that every man wants. That's the saying that my father said to me so many times that I remembered it. Not anything that had to do with grades in school, counting, tying a shoe, riding a bicycle, learning how to swim. Mine was sexual. That's what I remember. So, as a survivor, God has put me on this mission to be transparent and to talk about these things and to start educating and sharing and being the voice and being the face and being the one that's out there with my hand out to lift sisters up, to bring them closer to Him, to understand their situation. Everyone's situation is different. Everyone's abuse situation has been different. But we are survivors, want to be able to provide a place where a woman can come and talk and feel free to be able to share how she feels, to be able to sit and be in a room with other women that are not going to judge, that are not going to belittle her, that's not going to make her feel like she made the wrong decision, because we've got enough of that from the outside world. So we as survivors want to be that safe haven. Not only do we want to be there for women, but I also want to be there for children, because there seems to be a glitch in the system. The children are not counseled as much as they need to be. We focus on the mothers, but the children also need help, because what happens is those children begin to repeat what they saw. And then we don't understand why he grew up to be an abusive husband. That's what he saw growing up. And no one reprogrammed what he saw. No one said that's not how to be in a relationship. No one told that young girl that, no, your body is not to be used for sex. You have to cherish what you have, and the right man is going to love you, your mind, your body, and your soul, and that it's not about sex. No one are teaching these children, reprogramming them from what they saw, from what they were a part of, from the abuse that they endured. That's emotional abuse. That's not even touched. But as time goes on, we and survivors and the supporters, we will tackle this one building block at a time. But we are survivors, have a lot of events that are coming up that I wanted to talk about quickly before the show ends. And our first annual benefit luncheon called Hear Me Roar Against Domestic Violence is August 22nd. And it's at Destiny's Point Christian Center in Arlington, Texas. That is from 11:30 to 2. These events are also listed on our website, which is www.wearesurvivorsfoundation.org. You can go on there to review the upcoming events and actually buy tickets for the benefit luncheon that's coming up. September 14th, we have an annual golf tournament that we're going to be a part of, and that's going to be supporting Young Life, which is also a nonprofit organization that specializes in helping young children. October 3rd, we will be a part of the 14th annual Sister Walk and Roll for Breast Cancer Awareness. October 17th, we will be speaking at the Evening with the Stars. It's a domestic violence awareness event in Shreveport, Louisiana. October 24th, we will be guests of Granny's Place. Very excited about that. And also, we will be present at the 2015 Breast Cancer Awareness Praise Brunch. October 31st, we will also be speaking. It's the first annual Talk About It Domestic Violence Awareness Conference, and that will be held in Box Springs. And we have also been asked to speak. November 25th to the 27th, I will be speaking at the International Women's Conference, and that is in Finland. I'm really excited about that. For those who don't know, We Are Survivors also have a support group meeting. It's the first Wednesday of each month, and it's at Elite News headquarters. Once again, if you have comments, if you have questions, even survival stories, please feel free to visit the website. Again, it's www.wearesurvivorsfoundation.org. The phone number is 214-454-2933. Our email address is wearesurvivorsfoundation@gmail.com. Unfortunately, I don't know exactly what happened to Ms. Thompson, but we will definitely get her on the show. We'll try to get her on first part of next week. I do want to thank God for you listening, and I pray that today on the show something was said that touches your heart. We are here to help, to support, to guide, to listen, and to lift you up. In the name of Jesus, we will worship his holy name. God bless you. And once again, thank you for listening. Good night.